most English learners like you learn in school that when someone asks you, how are you? You should answer, fine. And you?
How are you?
Fine, fine.
Now, there's nothing really wrong with saying this, but it's a bit of a boring answer. And even worse than that, it can stop a conversation dead in its tracks.
Awkward.
So in today's lesson, we are going to give you some more fun, effective, and native-like ways that you can answer this question, how are you, so that every conversation you have can be more dynamic. Yeah, so if you're in England and someone asks, you all right? They're just asking, everything good? But if you say that, if someone in the States says, are you all right? They think that maybe you just had an accident, you're bleeding, you look sick. Could be like, did you hit your head on something? It makes me think of someone who is just learning with friends and they start imitating Joey. There's like, how you doing?
Yeah. How you doing?
I think you have to think a little bit about what are the kind of expressions that you use in your native language and try and define the equivalent that reflects you in English.
My identity is not my obstacle. My identity is my superpower.
By the end of this episode, you will have learned more than 30 better expressions than fine and you that you can use in real life conversations. Aw, yeah, Global Citizen. This is Ethan from Real Life English, where every single week it is our mission to take you beyond the classroom to speak English confidently and naturally, to connect to the world, and to actually use your English as a doorway to living your greatest life. So many of you will have had the experience of going through school and learning that when you get into a conversation and someone asks you, how are you? You answer, fine. And you? And there's nothing really wrong with this, but it is a bit boring. And even worse than that, it can stop a conversation dead in its tracks. So if you don't tend to be someone who's super extroverted and easily can keep a conversation going on and on, then that's not going to be the best way to get it started. We're going to explore some more fun, effective, and native-like ways that you can respond to this question, how are you, so that every conversation you have is more dynamic. And Ksenia, I know to get us rolling with this, you have prepared a game. So why don't you let us know what you got?
Yeah, so this is a game where we're going to pick your brain, Ethan, today. It's like an adaptation of a synonym game we once played, and it was so much fun. I know our viewers and listeners really enjoyed this game, but this time we're going to explore the alternatives to how are you greetings. Anything you can name how to respond to this question, to this greeting.
Let's, before we jump into that though, because there's been a couple of nice expressions. So I mentioned that a conversation can be stopped dead in its tracks. And you mentioned the expression, you want to pick my brain. So what do those two expressions mean?
Okay, so to pick your brain means to try to ask as many questions as possible and to dig deeper into a topic I'm interested in and you are an expert in. When we add adjective dead to something, it means like in this expression, it was dead. What was it?
In its tracks.
Dead in his tracks. It means like completely, to the fullest. Can you help me out here?
It's like you hit the brakes. So okay. Something stopped dead in its tracks. It can't continue.
Stops dead. It's like stops and there is no way.
You can imagine everyone's had that experience probably of being in a conversation and they'd be like, hi, how are you? I'm fine. And you? And then, yeah, I'm fine too. And then awkward silence.
Yeah, I know the expression dead end. So I thought it's a little bit similar. It's just like when the road ends and there is no way further. So it's a dead end.
There's no exit. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Or an investigation can hit a dead end. For example, when police are looking for a murder and their investigation hits a dead end because there's no more information that they can get. There's no more clues basically for them to figure out who did it. And you've already learned some expressions like dead in his tracks, pick your brain, but will you remember these in a few hours? Will you remember them tomorrow or next week? Well, if the case for you is that you don't have a photographic memory, just like me, then you definitely need to check out the Real Life English app where we give you vocabulary flashcards for every episode of the podcast. Now, these use intelligent software to help you never forget these new words and expressions that you're learning so that when you get into a conversation, you don't need to freeze up and forget these words that you know that you've learned. Rather, they will be readily available for you to use anytime you need them. So it's actually free for you to get started. Check it out by clicking the link down in the description or search for Real Life English in your favorite app store.
Let's get started. Let's set a timer. How about 30 seconds for you to try and get as many alternatives to how are you as you can get, Ethan?
I have a timer here. Maybe one of you can actually ask me.
How are you, Ethan?
I'm fine. I'm peachy. I'm splendid. Fantastic. Wonderful. Fabulous. Also not being so great, so I could say, I'm struggling. I'm hanging in there. I'm really overwhelmed. I'm so-so. I'm okay. I'm meh.
I'm meh.
I'm on cloud 9. I feel like $1 million. Mm. Can't complain.
You named like more than 10 variants, I guess. So I took note of them.
Did you guys know all of the words and expressions I mentioned?
I would never use peachy. I don't know even if it's like a peachy from a fruit or peachy like, I don't know what else can be peachy. Can you explain this one?
It means that you're, I don't know if I said this too, I'm swell. For me, those two are really similar. It's like, yeah, good. You know, everything's great. And for me, peachy, especially, I don't know if this is true, but for me, it sounds kind of southern. Like the American South, you would say peachy. And I think it does come from the fruit, maybe because you have a good peach. It's like juicy, it's sweet. And
so you're kind of feeling that, like
eating a good peach.
I'm going to use it because I'm really a fan of peaches. Like I'm waiting for the season and I'm peachy. It's like, it sounds nice.
I think like the ones that you use for expressing, like if you're not doing so well, so like I'm hanging in there is interesting. Mm-hmm. It has That's even that. One. NG sound that can be a challenge, right? Hanging in there. And even the there, I've heard people like also use like an N sound there, right? So hanging in there.
Yeah, I thought of that one because I actually have my mom visiting me here now. And she was asking about what we were going to be talking about on the podcast today. And she's like, oh, you should mention that this is my least favorite way that people respond to this question is hanging in there.
Really?
Because it just sounds so negative that you're just hanging in there.
For me, it would sound more neutral because it's like, it's nothing. It's just like hanging in, like, you know, nothing's happening. But you say that it has more of a negative connotation, right?
Yeah, because it's not so optimistic. It's like you're having a difficult time and you're just barely continuing, barely carrying on in a sense. So it's a nice expression because it's very visual. Like if you think of someone literally like trying to hang on to something, not to fall off, it probably comes from that because a lot of times our words become our actions and so on. So you might want to answer that even if you do have this feeling like I'm just hanging in there, like that, you know, you could give something that's more proactive, like I'm pushing through, or things aren't that great, but they're only going to get better.
Totally agree. But it reminded me of another phrase in English that, like, for example, when somebody's asking you about your life or, I don't know, about something or your relationships, you can say that things are a little bit up in the air. It's like related to hanging. Yeah, like hanging in the air or things are up in the air. It's like it's not decided. It's not like
uncertain.
You don't know. It's not certain. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, especially I think people use that more for relationships, for describing relationships. Is that it?
Ethan, is that it?
That the relationships up in the air.
Yeah, like things are more up in the air. If you want to, like you don't know exactly what's going on.
Yeah. For me, it's more that something hasn't been decided yet. So, for example, your summer vacation might still be up in the air because you and your partner have different places that you want to go, and so you haven't come to an agreement or a compromise yet. Still up in the air.
So I was thinking maybe we can try something different just to follow up this game, which is the ways that you can say the question "How are you?" to, because sometimes you will be asking instead of responding,
or you could hear a different someone asking you in a different way, right? And still know what's cracking, what's happening. What's going on? What's the news? How you doing? How you going? How you feeling? How are things with you? What's up? What's the news?
That is interesting. Like, each one has a particular characteristic or a nuance, I'd say, that is exploring an area of that question. Like, maybe I really want to know how you're feeling. So if you really wanted to know how somebody's doing, like, not just like starting like small talk, but rather trying to investigate, which one of those would you use?
That's a really good point, because sometimes people ask you the question just out of politeness, but they don't actually want to know. Like, they just want you to say, I'm fine, or I'm good, or I'm okay, right? They don't want your life story in that moment. But there's other times, depending on the person's tone, depending on their body language. Like, I imagine, you know, say I see you, Izzy, and maybe you're not looking at your best or something. It's like, maybe we're close enough where even maybe I put my hand on your shoulder or something. I say, how are you feeling, Izzy? Then it's like, okay, I really want to know what's going on with you. I really want to know what's happening in your life, not just a generic, I'm fine, I'm okay, I'm good response, right?
So you should be in person with that person, because it's hard to touch somebody's shoulder if you are in an online meeting.
I'll touch the webcam.
You can be like, But you know, like, in Portuguese, if you literally translate one very common way of asking that or even responding to that, it'll sound, in English, it'll sound more dramatic. It's like, is everything okay? Is everything okay? In English, I guess in American English, it sounds more like you're really asking.
Yeah.
Are you concerned?
Well, right? But that's interesting, because in British English, they have, they'll ask, are you all right? Which, if we say that in American English, it sounds like there's something wrong with you. So I don't believe that you are all right. I don't believe that you are feeling good. If you're in England and someone asks, you all right? They're just asking, you know, are you good? Is everything good? But if you say that, if someone in the States says, are you all right? They think that maybe you just had an accident, you're bleeding, you look sick.
Ethan, let me ask you here. So before that, you said that this is one of your mom's least favorite response to hear to the question, to the greeting, how are you? But do you have your default question and default answer?
Yeah, I would probably never say a full, how are you? So if I did say that, I'd be like, how are you? Or how you doing? I say that a lot too, how you doing? So using more of this reduction connected speech, how are you, how you doing, how you going, which is more Australian. I actually picked that up from Chad, that he would say that all the time. I used to live with him, and it somehow just stuck with me. So I'll still say that a lot to people, like, how you going?
How you going? How you going?
Mm-hmm. I'd say that those are my most go-tos for the question. I guess there's other fun ones, like what's cracking, of course. I don't actually use that so often.
There are so many funny ones.
What's maybe up?
Yeah.
There are. But it's insane. Like, and there's always this verb that you lose the G. So it's like, hey, what's cracking? What's buzzing?
What's shaking? I heard, yeah.
What's shaking? Yeah. That's more like, nice. I don't know, like something they'd hear in the 80s.
I don't know. Yeah.
The 50s.
The 50s more, right? But what is, there is this, what's sizzling or sizzling?
What's sizzling?
What is that? Ooh. What is actually the word sizzling?
I don't think I would ever use that, but sizzling is when you put something on the grill and it makes that sound, like that's
sizzling. There nice. There is this phrase, what's cooking as well, right? What's cooking?
What's cooking?
Good
what's
looking.
Cooking?
What's cooking?
Good looking.
Yeah. That sounds funny.
That's if you're trying to hit on someone at the bar, maybe.
At the bar.
But it's interesting. So there's always something related to sound, or maybe like, it's like, what's cracking or buzzing or sizzling, right? There's a sound. What's that noise?
I suppose it's fun ways that natives find to spark up a conversation. One of the things in preparing for this conversation that I was thinking about is, I think that this sort of word choice is so personal, because depending on your personality, you might be the type of person who would use more creative expressions like what's cooking or what's sizzling, like you guys are saying. That's not my personality at all. I wouldn't say that in English or any other language. Mm-hmm. But there are some people who, they have this kind of bright personality, and the kind of language that they tend to choose really reflects that, right? Mm-hmm. So I think you have to think a little bit about what are the kind of expressions that you use in your native language, and try and define the equivalent that reflects you in English. So just because you learned this expression, I'm on cloud nine, that's one I mentioned earlier, meaning that I'm feeling fantastic. That would be really positive. Maybe you are someone very colorful that's the kind of language you'd use. But just because you learned that expression, it doesn't necessarily mean that's the right expression for you to use. If you are someone who in your native language, you might just be the person who says, I'm fine, I'm good, I'm okay. So I would just be sensitive to that and really adapt the language to, you know, your identity, which is something we talk about a lot through the Real Life Way, right? That identity is such an important part of learning the language.
True. Yeah. True.
That makes me think about the importance of input, because without getting enough context, without living your English, it's really hard to understand all these like minutiae, these little details of, okay, this particular expression, it'll sound more like this, you know? So in order for you to know, like, you need to live the language. So even if you're watching series, that would be already a nice start. Like, look at the characters and see how they speak. It'll probably be matching their personalities, right? The way they introduce themselves and speak.
It makes me think of someone who is just learning with friends and they start imitating Joey. There's like, how you doing?
I used to hear that all the time from my students. Yeah. Although it is more informal, right? So I guess it's okay if you don't do that intonation. But they would do the intonation like, you're sounding like a cartoon or like Joey. How are you doing?
Like, I would say a lot, how you doing? So I don't know if people can tell the difference between that, how you doing, and how you doing. Mm-hmm. Like Joey says that. He puts a lot of emphasis on the U.
And the D, what's up with that D sound? Is that New Yorker or Italian? What is that?
How you doing?
Yeah.
I don't think it's the D, actually. I think it's how you doing. It's like there's almost like a guttural sound to it. Like, how you doing?
Guys, let me get back you a little bit to our how are you and the response, because Ethan, I'm listening, you know, you gave your favorite greetings, alternatives for greetings, but how do you respond, your favorite things to respond? I don't think you say I'm fine a lot. You avoid this gray area, because I'm fine doesn't say anything actually. Yeah, so I should kind of feel, and if I remember well, you choose other words.
I think, again, it's like if I'm talking to someone and it's like, do they really want to know how I'm feeling, or are they just asking to be polite? Mm-hmm. So if it's in the latter sort of case that they just are being polite, I probably just say, I'm good, or I'm great, everything's okay. But if I'm with someone who I'm closer with or they're generally asking, that I might, you know, choose something that's more reflective. So if I'm feeling, maybe I'm having a really great day, and it's like, oh, I'm awesome, I'm doing fantastic. I choose a word like that, right? Mm-hmm. I think I wouldn't use an expression so much. I don't think I would ever say like, oh, I'm on cloud nine, or living life to the fullest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who says that?
Couldn't be better, maybe.
Couldn't be better, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't be better.
Yeah, nice one. But imagine if you, like, for example, you are using our app and you are on a global speak and you want, like, you know, you connected to a student, a Real Life English app, and they say, oh, Ethan, how are you doing? Your response would be?
I'm great.
It's like...
I'm pretty boring in my response to that. But you could choose something to keep the conversation going. I think something that's really helpful is to actually add a little bit more onto that. Like, I'm great because... And like, share something that happened that day. Like, oh, I'm great. I just went rock climbing and had a really great session. And then, okay, it keeps the conversation going rather than just, I'm great. Mm-hmm. Awkward silence. Ksenia, so nice that too you brought up the Global Speak, which some of our new listeners, maybe they haven't heard about the Global Speak yet. So if that's the case for you, that you are new to this podcast and you have not heard us talk about this before, the Global Speak is exclusively on the Real Life English app. And this is something that we developed because so many of you say that you have many ways to listen to English. For example, this podcast, maybe other YouTube channels, other podcasts that you listen to, music and so on. But that you don't really have many ways to actually speak the language. Maybe you don't have friends that speak it. You don't live in a big city where you can meet English speakers. And so that's why we developed the Global Speak, which is the only place where anytime, anywhere, you can simply press a button and we instantly connect you to another English speaker in another part of the world. So this is fantastic because you can really have this feeling of virtually traveling around the world and be discovering all sorts of different cultures, sharing things from your culture, while at the same time, you're improving your English speaking skills. So the Real Life English app is free to download. You can listen to this podcast there so you can learn all of the new vocabulary, never forget it, and so much more. So definitely check it out for free in the description of this lesson.
Hey guys, so there is another fun activity we could do today that I believe may be valuable for our learners. They could use it for shadowing, repeat after us. Ethan, we were thinking with Easy, what if we could like act out a real life situation, like a scenario, mm-hmm. to greet each other, you know, and you could give us feedback, like say, if we sounded natural, how, like, what would be the better ways to do that, to answer that question in that particular situation? Easy, did you bring like some imaginary situation, real life situation?
Yeah. Real common one, a real simple situation that you might find yourself in. So imagine you run into an old friend on a street and she asks you, hey, what have you been up to, Xenia? Mm.
Hey, hello. I'm so glad to see you. You know, actually, there's been so much going on. I think we should grab a cup of coffee and there's this expression, spill the beans, right? I'll share all the news. I'll share all the secrets with you. Something like that, maybe.
Maybe you're like buzzing with like there's so much going on in all of these news and you just want to share it all.
Yeah. So actually my life's pretty busy. So I think my default would be to say that, oh, I'm like, you know, there's so much going on.
Spill the beans. I don't think we would use so much in this context. Spill the beans is when I know that you have some juicy information,
yeah,
or you're
like
keeping
gossip.
A secret from me. I might say, Ksenia, spill the beans. Mm-hmm. What is it you're not wanting to tell me? But you wouldn't use it so much for like catching up with someone. In fact, I took note of that expression, to catch up.
Uh-huh, to catch
that
up.
That would be a really great one to use. We should grab a coffee and catch up sometime.
Mm, really, yeah.
That's something
I think that's what I wanted to say. So it's feeding this situation more. Like, let's catch up mm-hmm. over a
especially
cup of coffee.
Especially if you have a lot to share. Yeah, because like this person's asking you, if they actually mean it, what have you been up to? By the way, what does that mean, Ethan?
Yeah, that was another really good alternative question. It's more specific, right, than just how are you? But mm-hmm. it's what have you been doing since the last time that we saw each other? Mm-hmm. What have you been up to?
Mm-hmm. Like up to actually mm-hmm. means that, right? Like doing something or...
Doing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you said something like glad to see you. And maybe if you hadn't seen someone a long time, you might say, well, it's great to see you again. And mm-hmm. even something else you could add there is it's been ages.
It's
That's
been
a really
ages.
Nice expression, mm-hmm. meaning it's been a very long time since we saw each other. Mm-hmm. Or even you could ask, how long has it been? You know, how long has it been since we last saw each other? Mm-hmm. How long has it been?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How long has it been?
I think there are more long time no see, but that's
long time no see.
Oh, yeah.
That's a common sentence. I don't
long
know
time if, no see.
Yeah. Is that normal? Is that weird if you say that like in a situation that it's like too casual and you're seeing long time no see? Are you going to sound like a movie character?
No, if it's an old friend, you know, someone you've had a close or a friendly relationship with, it sounds perfect. Long time no see. Mm-hmm.
I brought a more formal situation that actually happens a lot to me. So maybe I can learn something here too. So we have a lot of online meetings and we don't want to be late for meetings. So sometimes you join the room and there is only you and some other team member. And you two are waiting for the rest to join. And you have these 2-3 minutes, I don't know, to, you know, talk about something.
Fill the air, maybe.
Fill the air. Oh, wow. Nice. Sometimes I do feel awkward in this situation because I kind of don't know, should I talk or should I not talk? So I would ask like, so let's imagine it's you and me, Easy, on that, in that mm-hmm. room.
So I
waiting
just
for
joined,
other people
right?
to join. So you just joined and I said, oh, hello, Easy. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing all right. How about yourself? How's your day going?
Yeah, not much. Just, you know, waiting for the rest to join. I don't know. Usually I really feel awkward in these rooms, sitting alone. Help us out, Ethan. What's the best way to deal with this situation?
Sometimes I'm also, if I'm being completely honest, I also can feel awkward in those situations, especially because I think what makes it awkward is that you don't know how long it's going to be before someone
yeah,
else joins.
Exactly.
So it's sort of this, do we have time to mm-hmm. talk about something, or are we mm-hmm. going to be interrupted, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's the awkwardness of it. But I one thing I wanted to point out there is that Izzy said, how about you? But he actually dropped the sound from about. So he just said, how about you? Mm-hmm. Which is very common. And we can even use connected speech there. He didn't do it in this case, but you could say, how about you? Mm-hmm. That T-Y becoming a ch, how about you? So that's really nice to, after someone asks, how are you? And you give your response, you can end it by soliciting their response, right? How about you? I think that a really good go-to question to follow up to fill the air in this case might be, depending what day of the week it is either, how was your weekend? Mm-hmm. Or maybe if you're more towards the end of the week, could be, do you have any plans for the weekend? So people are always either reminiscing about their weekend. It's when people tend to have fun plans, right? Mm-hmm. So that can always be a good ace up your sleeve.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, what an expression, ace up your sleeve. What does it mean?
If we think of poker, I believe it would come from the scenario where someone might be cheating at poker because they have an ace up their sleeve. Mm-hmm. Like literally the sleeve is, I'm not really wearing long sleeve, I have a short sleeve, but they have an ace card hidden there so they can get a good hand.
Ace is like the highest card.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And up someone's sleeves, like it's within the sleeves, like you're mm-hmm. hiding something there, mm-hmm. right? So
exactly.
When you said ace up.
And when we use it in this case, it's like a secret weapon or mm-hmm. a tool that you have at your disposal.
So, you know, Brits have their secret weapon to talk about weather. And I see Americans have their secret weapon, like weekends. Let's talk about how we spend the weekend or what are we going to do over the weekend, which is coming, mm-hmm. right? So weather and weekend. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could always talk about the weather, but that's just so boring, right?
Yeah.
It's like the awkward situation in the elevator.
Funny you should mention secret weapons, Xenia, because I actually found a video when I was researching and preparing for this episode. And this guy has an interesting question or interesting thing that you can say in these moments that you can easily turn a small talk into a more interesting conversation just by saying that one line. So it's a short video. It's a short clip. Let's watch that. What do you think?
I'm keen to see this because I feel like it's something that could be helpful for me.
I know.
Awkward elevator situations.
Exactly. It's so useful. This is not just for English learners. This is for natives and small talk amateurs of all mm-hmm. kinds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think learning a language, ultimately, it can be a really good opportunity to work on our social skills.
Exactly.
I know for me, which actually I think we're going to talk about next week, right, Ksenia? But for me, that was really important, learning languages, for coming out of my shell. Mm-hmm. Expression meaning that sort of losing my guardedness mm-hmm. and being able to be more open, more yeah. vulnerable, social with people.
When you first get into a small talk situation, I think we need to establish appropriate goals. Rachel Greenwald, a matchmaker and an academic, has this wonderful saying, your goal is to be interested, not interesting. A lot of us go into these situations thinking that we need to be really fascinating, engaging, and interesting, when in fact, we just need to be present and be interested in the conversation that's happening. There's always something to say. You can always ask a question. My mother-in-law was amazing at small talk. She had a black belt in small talk, and her superpower was a simple phrase. She would pause for a moment, and she would say, tell me more. If you are ever in a situation, a communication conversation, where you don't know what to say, most of the time you could simply say, tell me more, or give me some more detail, or what did you mean about that point? And just by giving the person an opportunity to speak again, that gives you time to find what you might want to say and to connect to it.
I liked how he said, my mom had a black belt in small talk.
Yeah. I took note of that too. What does that mean if someone has a black belt in some sort of skill?
Easy, do you want to explain it?
Yeah, like to be highly skilled at doing something, right? Mm-hmm. So good that people
comes from like, that.
Related to karate and martial arts, karate, right? Yeah, that's the highest level you can get.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it basically means that you've mastered it, right?
So this ace up your sleeve is tell me more.
Right? Mm-hmm, exactly. And I think it's not just like saying it. You need the right tone as well, right? And the right time for using it. He even said like she would pause, her his mother-in-law would pause, and then she'd say that. Because if somebody just says like, hey, I'm doing great. If you immediately respond with like, tell me more, that's it's going to sound like a machine, right? So you can pause like, right, tell me more.
You could add something to that like, oh, that's so interesting, or oh, that's fascinating, tell me more. I think that sounds more natural than just if you had a very robotic, tell me more sort of response.
Or you can say like, I would want to hear more about it. I would be curious to hear.
I don't know anything about that.
By the way, guys, we just watched this video. It was from Matt Abrahams. I really like the guy. I watched a TED Talk with him. Actually, it was a lecture, a recorded lecture. And I listened to two podcasts with him, I guess. And he has his own podcast. I don't remember the name, but we can link it in the show notes. He really knows a thing or two about communication, small talk, about how to break this barrier and turn a small talk into a meaningful conversation. And we do need to record that podcast with you, Ethan. It would be so interesting to talk about it because many people struggle with that. I think I should master first myself small included. Talk. I'm even have to master first small talk and then, you know, going further with the meaningful conversation.
The hard thing with it too is also, Ksenia, I believe you are an introvert, and introverts in general tend to feel repelled by small talk. Introverts tend to be more interested in having deep conversations around things that they are fascinated by. But extroverts, on the other hand, tend to thrive with small talk. Like they can talk about anything. They can have a conversation about anything and be interested in it. So it's sort of differing skill sets. So if you are that introvert, I think it's gaining the ability to drive that small talk towards something that you're more interested in and can have a deeper conversation about.
I think that's why his tip was so good, because he was saying, if you ask, tell me more, you're going to say more things, and then it'll give you a chance to find something to connect with. And when something resonates with you, you'll be like, oh, okay, you didn't jump on that, and you ask more questions related to that or make comments that will be more meaningful to you, instead of just you trying to make up questions and responses. So questions in general are a good way to follow up like more meaningful questions. So don't just ask like, how about you? Because I responded like, how about you? I'm great. How about you? But as Ethan said, you can be more specific. How about how was your weekend? And that will give you more to explore, right?
Yeah, because like, you know, many of those, even it's not a small talk yet, it's just like the starter, and they just end up there on the third line. Like, hey, how are you? I'm great. Yeah. And you? Yeah, I'm great too. And here comes this like, okay, this awkward silence. I don't know, Ethan, do you have any third lines, how to continue? I think that's exactly the topic of the next episode, right?
Yeah.
Exactly that, like third, fourth line. What comes even after that? Yeah.
We'll have to save that for another day. So if you guys struggle with small talk and you would like us to bring you an episode helping you to get those third or fourth lines, how do you go beyond just the response to how are you, then comment down below if you're on YouTube, or you can send us an email at hello@reallifeglobal.com and let us know if you want an episode on that, or you can let us know about any other lessons you would like us to make, and we might just do that. All right, so let's talk about what we're digging this week. So Ksenia, some of our learners mentioned that they're not sure why we asked this. What are you digging? What does that mean if you're digging something for people who are newer here?
Yeah, some people may be confused because actually the literal meaning of the verb to dig is just to use your shovel and like, and dig the ground.
What you'll be doing in your garden this spring, right?
That's what I'm going to do. Yeah. But what I'm digging in this context, in our podcast, how we use it, is what I've been up to, right, recently, or what I was enjoying, what I was into this week.
You shared with me earlier this week what you did last weekend, which it just sounded like so wonderful, so lovely. So maybe you could share with the audience about that.
Mira and I, we visited the ostrich farm this weekend. Does it print like ostrich, right? Do you pronounce, how do you pronounce it?
Yeah, it sounds like a G, even though I think it's C-H-E. that it ends mm-hmm. in?
Ostrich.
Ostrich.
Ostrich. It's such, it doesn't sound English at all, this word to me. Mm-hmm. Ostrich. Yeah.
Probably isn't.
Yeah.
Originally.
For you guys who don't know what it is, maybe we can put here the picture of this animal. This is actually a bird, the biggest bird on earth. And what I learned...
And I think with the hardest egg, right? I don't know if you got to touch an ostrich egg.
Exactly. That's what I said. I should have brought... I bought a shell of an egg. It's like this one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's huge. So we learned that actually they are the same age as the dinosaurs. So probably they were living... in the same times like as the dinosaurs, and they just survived or something, and their legs like really look like dinosaurs. And now Mira is very happy to have that shell of an egg because she's gonna play as if it was a dinosaur egg.
So I have a question. So can you mount a would you say mount a an ostrich or mount on
ride maybe?
I would say ride or ride an
ride
ostrich,
yeah. Mount. Yeah, I was thinking more direct translation to Portuguese.
You might
ride.
Mount
yeah.
an ostrich head. A hunter might mount an ostrich head on their wall as a trophy.
Oh my God. That
I
would
find
be
that a
cruel.
Bit disgusting, but yeah.
So, right. Can you ride an ostrich?
Yeah, not at that farm. They said that they had practiced it before, but they stopped. But that's like a universal practice. They do organize ostrich races.
Races?
But they said that it's not allowed to ride an ostrich for more than 5 minutes. So that was like the rule or something.
Like an adult person?
It's probably backbreaking for them, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. What the word you said? Heartbreaking? Heartbreaking?
Backbreaking.
Backbreaking.
Maybe heartbreaking too.
I thought, why heartbreaking? They feel humiliated being ridden by a human. So backbreaking, exactly. Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. Probably that. But I was surprised because I was interested in learning, okay, how do they survive our winters here in Ukraine? Because they just come from Africa, right? But she said that they're very, okay, help me out here.
Adaptable.
Persevere. Like, I don't know. They persevere.
Persistent.
Persistent. Yeah. I don't know. So they are resistent to cold or something like
resilient.
That. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Resilient. I think I was looking for this word. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So they're
nice
very
vocab.
Resilient and they can withstand temperatures up to minus 20 Celsius.
Oh, wow. It's a lot more than a human.
Yeah.
They're really dinosaurs.
But because of like a colder climate here in Ukraine, they do not, I don't know how to say that. So actually you need here the incubators to produce ostrich chicks because they don't do that because of the climate. Like they lay eggs, but then humans, like people take it away from them and put it in the incubators.
Can you eat ostrich eggs?
I really want it. That farm has a restaurant actually where they serve the ostrich omelets. They say that one egg can feed like 10 people, like that omelet from that one egg.
That's crazy.
But we were short of time and like there were many people at the restaurant, so I plan to return there in summer and I hope I can try it next time.
I know some fancy restaurants do ostrich burgers as well. Like they make a burger from the ostrich meat.
Oh, really? Where? Mm-hmm. Where is it?
Mm-hmm. In the States, I know there's some fancy restaurants that do that. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be good because it's very lean meat.
Yeah, they said,
So the other day I shared a YouTube channel here of these chefs, right? From the Bon Appetit magazine. Mm-hmm. And in one of these clips, the guy actually cured like an egg yolk. He cured it. So he put it like in salt and
cured it.
So to cure something, I think it's a more specific word that you'd use in cooking, right? Especially if you're a chef, that you put something in salt and it'll absorb, the salt will absorb all the water and keep it like fresh, right? I don't know if fresh is the word, but it'll not go bad.
It preserves it, right? Like you have salted cod, for example, or the... like presunto, these different kinds of salted meats was a way that they used to preserve it when they didn't have refrigeration. But nowadays it's a cultural thing that has persisted that people enjoy eating still these foods that are cured with salt.
Cured. Right? But finally, he cured an ostrich egg. It's huge. And so he had to use like this big recipient with like a bunch of salt. And In the end, at the end,
many kilos of salt.
At the end, he used that like as Parmesan cheese. Oh, what do you do with Parmesan cheese?
Like he shredded,
grated.
Yeah, he grated it, basically on pasta, and it looked amazing. It looked just like cheese.
Ah, like he like shredded or grated the egg, like
the egg, but it was cured. I can share that.
I'm wanting to see that.
Interesting.
Just like a weird idea.
Shared in the show notes as well, right?
Mm-hmm. And you can do that. Like you can do that with regular eggs. But anyway,
they actually said that it's very hard to crack the ostrich egg, so you should use the drill to like get to the.
All right, so Ksenia, it sounds like a fascinating weekend. Not so typical in your corner of the world, I'm guessing, to see ostriches. Right?
Totally, not common.
Even a hard word to say, ostriches. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys so much for joining us. We hope that you have gotten some good tools, some good vocabulary, language that you can use next time you have a conversation. Maybe you want to go and try it out right now on the Real Life English app in the Global Speak, where it's absolutely free. You just press a button and get connected to someone else. Ask them, how you doing? Or use one of the alternatives you learned today. And also for your response, try to use something new and creative. And if you are enjoying these lessons, a free way for you to support us is by subscribing and hitting the bell here on YouTube. Give us a like as well, because all this really helps us to reach other people. And if you are on a podcast platform like Apple or Spotify, then please give us a 5-star review, because again, this helps people from all around the world to discover us and have a lot of fun learning with us as well. And remember that no matter what divides us, that which unites us is so much greater. 1, 2, 3.
Oh yeah.
Hey guys, this is Ethan again. Just one more thing before you leave, and that is the Real Life newsletter. Would you enjoy getting a short email from your fluency coach, Izzy, Ksenia, or myself every Friday to help you, in less than 5 minutes, make English a fun, natural part of your life? More than 150,000 learners subscribe to our newsletter. It is easy to join, easy to cancel, but most importantly, easy to read. In each edition, we share 3 things. 1 inspiring idea for you to think about. 1 fun thing that we've discovered recently, like a new TV series, YouTube clip, or song, etc. And 1 idea of an activity you could try for you to actually use your English in real life. What's more, right in our newsletter, we teach you useful everyday vocabulary and more. And it's a place where we ask you all questions and for feedback. So it's a way for you to get in touch with us. If you'd like to try it out, just go to reallifeglobal.com/Friday, or you can simply click the link in the description of this podcast. Then you'll just type in your name and email, and you'll get the very next Real Life newsletter. Aw, yeah.